Bonoff, Senate File 248 is a late bill. Why are you here?
Well, Mr. Chair, I would not have a late bill, so I'd like to tell the story.
That's what we're here for.
Okay. So Senate File 248 was introduced on time, heard in committee on time, was passed out of committee and sent to the floor, at which time that it was discovered that the House companion had a different number. We've done some investigation, and what we learned that Representative Benson, who was the House author, requested multiple versions of the bill when it was drafted, gave our office the initial version, and actually introduced a different version without letting us know. And so our bills are actually identical. We adopted his language in committee. They're identical, but they had two different numbers. We couldn't figure out why it was didn't have a companion given. He sent me over the jackets, and I introduced them. And so Cindy Maxwell was in the reviser's office. She did the research and has determined what that story was.
Senator Bonoff, you'd think a body that can have 35 authors on a bill wouldn't need clone jackets prepared.
I don't understand what happened, Mr. Chair. I don't know why that happened.
We need more investigation.
What do you think, Senator Stump? You're the most senior member of the Senate. Have you ever seen this happen before?
I haven't, but I do think that it's okay as long as we're going to harvest cattails.
Mr. Chair, the bill was amended so that it's not a statewide harvesting like the bill originally was drafted, because apparently that was very controversial. So this harvests the cattails in one small
Senator way. Bonoff, the Rules Committee doesn't care what the bill does.
Oh, good. Okay.
Ooh. Ooh. What are cattails?
Senator Stump moves.
Wait a minute.
Senator Pappas.
Anytime we change rules, it's supposed to go to the State and Local Government Committee. Oh. And this is the first time I've seen this bill. Sorry, Senator Bonoff. I mean, it may be fine, but my committee actually just rejected a bill by Senator Saxhog that was amending Minnesota rules, kind of going around the process. So I just want to make sure this is not kind of going around the process, and I apologize that I missed the presentation.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, what I shared about the presentation was it actually wasn't a late bill, and that the House author apparently had a few versions of the bill and sent us the yellow jacket erroneously that wasn't matched up with the actual one he used, and our language, in fact, is identical, and it made deadline in the House, was sent to the floor, made deadline in the Senate, we thought, and then was passed in committee, doesn't amend the delete everything, doesn't change any rules, and I do have the copy of the delete everything. It just... I can give you a copy of that, Madam Chair. We don't, Senator Pappas, we don't change rules. And it was passed out of committee and sent to the floor. But I will give you a copy of the actual one that passed.
Senator Pappas, Senator Stump's motion is going to re-refer the bill to your committee.
Oh, okay.
But we won't need it if
it is. I didn't know what the motion was, so I was trying to get caught up here.
It involved cattails.
Where is the delete all?
It's right here. I have a copy of the delete all. That's what I'm saying. Mr. Chair, we did actually narrow the scope of the bill so that it doesn't amend any rules, and so that's why we were advised it would go to the floor. We don't amend the rules.
Okay. All right.
Wants to have it inserted in the journal too.
Recorded 12:10. Rule 12:10.
Okay. The issue is what we don't have in front of us is the committee report, which took out the rulemaking authority, Senator Pappas. Mm. So if we adopt the committee report as suggested under Senator Stump's upcoming motion, what we'll be adopting is this A2 document.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Now, Senator Stump moves the Joint Rule 2.03 be suspended for all further proceedings under Senate File 248, and that the report from the Committee on Environment and Energy be adopted.
And, Mr. Chair, this A2 is the report from the committee, or is this a delete-all amendment?
It is the report from the committee. It's the language in the report from the committee. Okay. We just don't have the engrossed version.
Okay, because it's written as a delete-all, Mr. Chair.
Right.
Okay.
But that is the contents of the report from the committee, the A2.
Are we going to have the opportunity to read that, Mr. Chair?
That's it.
Everybody has it.
Teasing.
Spring is in the air. On the stump motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
If you know, the motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I won't let that happen again. I'll check my numbers.
And we'll make sure, too.
Senator Senjum, Senate Resolution Number 55.
Oh. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate Resolution 55 is, I will call it an all-American great resolution. If you don't like it, you probably don't like your children, your spouse, your grandparents, grandparents. It's all about the University of Minnesota's women hockey team and the fact that they have won now two consecutive national championships, have gone two seasons undefeated, 41 victories, in fact, 49 victories in total since they were last defeated. So, a fantastic team, a great bunch of young women, 12 of which of the 22 are from Minnesota, at least I know that, maybe more, but a great victory again this year in the national championships, and I thought it was appropriate for the Senate to recognize that and put together this resolution, and so I'd ask for your support.
Senator Senjum, did you come up with this creative recognition yourself, or did somebody bring this to you?
No, the idea of doing it is my own, but the I certainly didn't write the resolution, but I thought it was appropriate. I mean, this is a pretty spectacular team in their backyard, and I think it's very, very appropriate to recognize them. Kind of like we did Winona State a couple of years ago as they won the national basketball championship, the boys in Winona. So,
members, I think our intent is, and we don't normally bring resolutions here that aren't going someplace. But I believe the team is going to be in the Senate gallery on Monday. Is that right? I believe they're going to be here on Monday. So our intent would be to pass this to the floor, give Senator Senjum an opportunity to bring it up. We'll recess our floor session on Monday once they're here and allow Senator Senjum to introduce the resolution to the full Senate and take a voice vote. Mr. Bonner?
I think that's correct, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman,
we wouldn't want it to fail when we put them in the gallery.
No red votes.
I just wanted to note that the protocol of the Senate is becoming more and more like the other chamber.
Yes.
We have to be cautious about how we do these things.
Senator Belanger's back.
Senator Limmer, that's a point well taken.
Yes.
But I think if we've done it for Winona, we could do it for the U.
Well, Mr. Chair, if you don't want to do that way, and I think you probably do, but obviously, if not, we just want support for the resolution so we can get it over to the athletic department, the hockey players, and let them know what we thought about them. But
Senator Senjum, maybe we should have a roll call vote. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, with the editorializing here about a grueling triple overtime, it didn't seem it was that grueling for them. It might have been for you or me if we were playing on the team.
That would have been grueling. Senator Marty.
To my staff, is it Monday they're going to be here? We expect, so we'll probably try to deal with some before. Who would like to move Senator Senjum's resolution?
With caution, Mr. Chair, make the motion.
Senator Limmer moves that the committee recommend that Senate Resolution Number 55 be adopted. Any discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails.
Thank you, member.
Senator Senjum, good idea. With caution.
With caution.
Senator Hoffman, Senate File 640. Senator Hoffman, this bill is late. How come?
Mr. Chair, I don't know why this bill is late.
Sir. Oh, I'm sorry. It's not late. It has a advisory council in it. Oh. I'm sorry. My apologies.
Oh, that's worse.
Duly noted.
What's the advisory council, Senator Hoffman?
Mr. Chair, thank you. And before I start, I would like to offer up or have somebody offer up an author's amendment, which should be A3, which is floating amongst the members.
Mr. Chair,
I can either wait or I can start in with what.
Let's discuss the amendment before we offer it, Senator. Okay. Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, is this the first time the bill's been heard?
No.
It was since then. It's not an author's
right
amendment.
Now.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Senator Hoffman couldn't offer it anyway. He's not a member of the Rules Committee.
I understand, but Mr. Chair, I wanted to make that clear.
Before we move the amendment, Senator Hoffman, tell us what the A3 amendment does.
It's, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's basically some technical language. We have, as you can see, we're deleting words, the government agreements, federal trade, and then as directed by governor and legislature from the original Senate file number 640. So it's just to clean up the language.
So, Senator Hoffman, are you saying that the Committee on Jobs, Ag, and Rural Development and the Committee on State and Local Government didn't get the bill cleaned up before it came here, or has there been some new development?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it was just some technical changes that needed to happen just to make it so it's a simplified process in looking at how it is.
Senator Pappas, does the amendment look in order? It was through your committee, Senator?
It was discussed with me, the amendment, so I think it's fine.
Does this have to go to judiciary, Mr.
Chair? Yeah.
The graveyard of all bills.
The graveyard.
Senator Pappas moves the A3 amendment. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The A3 is adopted.
It's here, Mr. Chairman. It's here because it has legislators on the advisory group.
We have line 1.13, two senators.
To labor, environment.
Any discussion? That language okay to you? Would want to point out by the minority leader?
Mr. Chairman, I think that seems to be fine.
And several versions of that. Right. Those appointments around, I guess. But, and Senator Hoffman, this bill has to go to Senator Tomasoni's committee. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that is my complete understanding.
It has, why would it go there? No, it would go to finance then, Mr. Chairman. He doesn't have a freestanding committee. Because it has some financial implications?
Big money.
He wants to put this on this one.
I'm told finance wants to see it, so. Senator Cohen moves that Senate file 640 as amended be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Finance Committee. Any discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
As you know, the motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman of the committee, thank you.
Senator Schmidt. Senator Schmidt's bill also is not late. It is here because
because they want deed to provide.
Mr. Chair, we'd like to, if you will, we'd like to form a Minnesota-Wisconsin Boundary Area Invasive Species Commission, and I believe that's why it's been referred.
If it has,
and there's legislators on this also on paid.
This is on, let's see, section 15, page 9, I believe. There's a lot in this bill. This is the omnibus fish and wildlife bill. A lot of language from DNR here. A lot of non-controversial stuff, maybe some stuff that's relatively more controversial. But I believe the issue before this committee is section 15 with that invasive species commission.
Senator Schmidt, is there a reason we need 10 legislators on this? It seems pretty bulky.
I'll tell you what, Mr. Chair, I'm not necessarily committed to 10 legislators. What we've done here is we're trying to elevate the issue of invasive species. I believe this concept has been raised both on both sides of the border in the past. We just haven't gotten both legislatures to agree to moving this forward and with the consent of the executives in each state. So we'd like to start this conversation again. If this committee feels as though a smaller number of legislators would be more appropriate, I'm certainly amenable to hearing that discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gazelka.
First of all, I wonder if the DNR isn't already in some cooperative arrangement, not necessarily legislatively, and I would support zero legislators. That would be a good number.
Somebody here from the department?
It's the whole committee is legislators.
Mr. Chairman, members, Steve Hirsch, DNR Ecological and Water Resources Director. We don't currently have any formal commission or advisory committee on invasive species with the state of Wisconsin. There are some other venues that are broader in scope in the Midwest, such as the one that comes to mind is the Great Lakes Aquatic Nuisance Species Panel, but nothing specifically with the state of Wisconsin.
So, Mr. Hirsch, is this language the department drafted? And if it is, why do you need 10 and not 6?
Mr. Chairman, no, this is not language from the department.
Mr. Chair, if I could, I received this language consultation with Senator Saxhog. I believe this is a language that he's advanced in the past, and it seemed like a good idea to me, representing areas of Goodhue, Wabasha, Winona County in southeastern Minnesota. The threat of invasive species is real. We feel as though it's important to elevate that discussion and to have folks on both sides of the river talking about it.
Senator Newman, then Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hirsch, is there any reason why the Minnesota DNR would be unable to work with the Wisconsin DNR without having this commission prepared by the legislature on this topic?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Newman, we would be able to work with the Wisconsin DNR to the extent that, you know, they would be willing to work with us. We have had a number of issues associated with Asian carp on the border waters. And I will say that the state of Wisconsin has not seemed to be as eager to get in discussions with us as we have been with them.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, Mr. Hirsch, it would seem to me that even if we pass this legislation, we don't have any control over the state of Wisconsin. They wouldn't have to work with us anyhow. And I just question whether or not it is necessary to create a new commission for the purpose of discussing this with the state of Wisconsin, whereas, you know, in all likelihood, the state DNR, Minnesota State DNR, could talk to the folks over in Wisconsin and report back to us with respect to recommendations without the creation of a brand new commission. And again, I don't know that we can pass legislation and require the state of Wisconsin to cooperate with us if they don't want to.
Mr. Chair, if I could, and Senator Newman, you know, what this does is elevates this issue, and it expresses an interest in this legislature and this state of beginning this conversation. As Mr. Hirsch just mentioned, the DNR does not feel as though its interest in having a conversation has been reciprocated from our neighbors to the east, and this is a way of making it clear that we want to have this conversation and that this is our, I guess, our proposal to have a commission. We're not proposing anything that's terribly expensive or anything that's inappropriate. We just want to have this conversation. This is a way of getting that conversation started.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Schmidt, how about perhaps if you want to elevate it rather than create a brand new commission, how about if we pass a resolution asking the DNR to talk to the state of Wisconsin? I mean, is there not an easier way to elevate this issue, which I agree is an important issue, but do it with our existing resources without creating a rather significant new commission.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Newman, I appreciate your suggestion here. You know, if Wisconsin would like to answer with a resolution and answer in kind and show that they're interested in having this conversation, I think that would be appropriate. I mean, I think this signals our keen interest in having this dialogue, and I think this is a good idea. And I don't think it's terribly expensive. I think it's a way of elevating the issue, of signaling our clear intent to have that conversation. And I'd much prefer to move along with this proposal and see how our neighbors to the east respond.
Senator Gazelka.
Yes, Chair, Senator Newman.
Senator
Skoy. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Schmidt. On the North Dakota, South Dakota, Manitoba border, we've had a number of water issues relating to the Red River and flooding. And after the 97 flood, a group of legislators got together in a legislative forum to discuss issues of interest. We didn't have this commission that would have the force of law and, you know, all of that, but we did put together a mechanism for legislators to get together to have conversations of these mutual interests. What we have found is that one of the main powers of a legislator is to convene a meeting, and when you convene the meeting, the agencies attend if you invite them. And so maybe a little less formal structure would be could be contemplated. And if you take a look at that International Legislators Forum that's still ongoing, it takes a relatively small amount of money from the state. It's staffed by the Consensus Council of North Dakota. But it brings together a number of legislators, and I'm blanking on the number. It's either 6 or 8 from each state. They do it once a year, and one year Minnesota hosts it, and the next year North Dakota does, and Manitoba, et cetera. And it's pretty good. We've had we've expanded the areas of interest from flooding to we've done some joint tourism things, and we've looked at methamphetamine regulations between across borders. And, you know, maybe it'd be good for Wisconsin and Minnesota to contemplate something comparable. You might even want to bring Iowa in. I mean, this is an issue that would impact them. Do it through a little less formal process, but you'd get the same outcome, I think.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to point out on page 11, line 2, there is a blank in the bill. But I don't know if Senator Schmidt has thought about what date he wants to fill in there.
Senator Pappas, I'm wondering if Senator Schmidt had talked about taking section 15 out of the bill.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm trying to gauge the sentiment of the committee here, and I have a feeling that may be the direction we're headed here. Before filling in the blank, if that's a suggestion of the chair, I would take that to heart.
Well, I think to Senator Skoy's part, I spent some time on the Manitoba, North Dakota, Minnesota group also, and they hold an annual meeting, and this does seem a little cumbersome and, frankly, probably a little expensive. I mean, the governor's going to put 5 people on here. The House is going to put 5. The Senate's going to put 5. The department's going to use a whole bunch of time to staff this thing. And we've already identified the problem of invasive species. I think it's time to quit working on it and quit studying it. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, I share some of your sentiments. I like Senator Skoy's suggestion that try and I don't think you can do it today, but try and come up with some sort of way. I think Wisconsin and Minnesota have had, I mean, not invasive species is the issue here in this being a game and fish bill. That's appropriate, but I also think I think your point is right that when legislators get together, or Senator Scoia's point is that agencies do come along and so on, and I think it would be a good thing to do both for the invasive species and other things, but I don't know there has to be nearly this formal and extensive of a proposition, so maybe removing this now and coming back and I think the issue is with invasive species, the urgency of dealing with it right now. But I almost think that you and some of the other members of the legislature who represent border communities, given the fact that Wisconsin DNR hasn't been very engaged, maybe contacting colleagues in Wisconsin and just trying to informally get something going and push the two DNRs together.
Sure. Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I think it it might be a little bit narrow in scope. Just a few years ago, we had the issue over the wasting disease in deer and ticks, the Lyme disease. I mean, there's a number of issues, I think, between states that maybe one group could actually be able to work with our neighboring state on a number of issues. And I know the invasive species is the on the front burner, but in a year or two there might be another issue, and if we do it so that it has kind of the designation of working with whatever issue, that a couple years ago it was just the issue over the tax reimbursements. I mean, there's a number of them. That's just the nature of having a border state, I guess. So, I mean, you got a good idea, but I look through here and I see things like, and this is maybe a good idea, but the ability to take and receive gifts and set up a special account in the management and budget. I mean, it does get to be a little more involved than I think than you may need.
Sure. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess with respect to the discussion we're having, I move that we delete Section 15 from the bill, starting on line 9.21 and over to 12.16.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, does this bill have to go to finance from here, or does it go to the floor?
Finance.
It goes to finance. Well, Senator Schmidt, if you decide that you want to rework this section at all and streamline it, and you could, you know, I was wondering, too, why you had a separate commission and an advisory committee. Mm-hmm. Would you just make sure that you run it by our staff to make sure that it follows the guidelines if you're going to create something new?
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, I'd be happy to do that. And committee, thank you for your feedback here. I do appreciate that. And you know, given the feedback I've received, I would support at this time that amendment.
Any other discussion? On the hand, motion to delete Section 15. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gazelka.
Before we wrap this up, I do want to make an oral amendment to delete Section 51 and Section 52 related to a moratorium on sand mining in Minnesota. In particular, a couple of reasons to bring it up. I'm not on the Environment Committee anymore and dealt with game and fish bills, and typically they were non-controversial. This is a very, very controversial section, and I would like to make that motion that we delete those two sections and keep the game and fish bill less controversial.
Senator Schmidt.
Mr. Chair, if I could speak to that. We've had a number of discussions in the last couple months regarding the issue of silica sand mining, and it's something that I take very seriously coming from southeastern Minnesota. It happens to be a region of a very, a delicate water balance in the karst topology, and we've got some folks here who might be able to speak to that. It also happens to be host to Minnesota's best trout streams, and I couldn't in good faith put forward a game and fish bill knowing the, I guess, the threats that are on the table to trout fishing in southeastern Minnesota without taking a stab at getting some state standards in place here. My hope is that we're able to put in place a mechanism, a process, by which we can identify strong state standards, clarify roles for state agencies, empower local decision makers to permit silica sand mining operations in Minnesota moving forward. There's no guarantee, however, that we're going to get that this session, and this is my best attempt to, in consulting experts, to try to put in place some safeguards to protect our trout waters and streams in southeastern Minnesota. So that's why we have sections 51 and 52 in here. They're not just pulled from the clouds here. This is based upon recommendations that we've received, and by no means is this a moratorium. This is intended to show the way forward for balancing interest in sand mining and owners' rights and local control with protecting our streams and our natural resources in southeastern Minnesota.
So, Senator Schmidt, does it do anything other than create a buffer strip of 25 feet?
So we have sections 51 and 52 do essentially three things here. One, in section 51, line 27.25, it prohibits from within 1 mile any excavation or mining of industrial silica sand, by any means, within 1 mile of any spring, groundwater seepage area, fen, or designated trout stream. And secondly, moving on to section 52 here, it prohibits the commissioner of the DNR from issuing water use permits for the appropriation of groundwater in the area designated as the Paleozoic Plateau. That's essentially five counties in southeastern Minnesota where this would be affected. And that, of course, is on line 27.31. And then the third thing that this does is on 28.7, it's listed, but it's really Part B here, beginning on 28.4. It's prohibiting any mining-related activity within 25 feet of the groundwater level of the water table, essentially. So that's what we're doing. This is our best effort, based upon conversations I've had, at establishing specific state standards for where mining should take place and where it should not, and how we can protect valuable resource in southeastern Minnesota. Again, my preference would be that we're able to put in place a process for identifying proper state standards and roles so that we get this right. But at this stage, there's no guarantee. And my clear preference would be to keep this language in here so that we have a position on this in this bill.
Senator Hancock. Mr. Chairman, and not being a part of that committee that may have heard this bill earlier, this language that you have, Senator Schmidt, where does it permit silica sand mining in the state? Does it permit it anywhere?
Oh, absolutely. Mr. Chair and Senator Hancock, absolutely. First of all, this only pertains to a specific area in southeastern Minnesota with the technical definition of the Paleozoic Plateau. Essentially, it's Houston, Fillmore, Goodhue, Wabasha, and Winona counties. And actually, I think there is a little bit of eastern Olmsted County. So this, five full counties and a portion of Olmsted County. And those counties in southeastern Minnesota. And what it does is it says within 1 mile of this water feature, you cannot mine. There are areas outside of that 1 mile buffer in which you can mine, and it says that you cannot DNR cannot issue the water use permit. Waters are very sensitive in this area. When you use water, if it's heated and returned back to its source, it affects trout, and they need the cold water. That's why they proliferate down there. If we end up increasing the water temperatures of our trout streams, we're going to have a negative impact on a very lucrative industry in southeastern Minnesota. And then the third thing, of course, is that mining within 25 feet of the water table. So this leaves plenty of land available for silica sand mining. And what we're trying to do here is just say where it's not ideal to be mining.
Senator Gazelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The two parts of this. Number one, the Pollution Control Agency and the DNR still have a lot of authority to watch over this. I think, as I've looked how they've done their work on other projects, it's not a cakewalk. But number two is it's in a game and fish bill that I think would be maybe let it stand on its own merits. I think many of us would like to support the game and fish bill, but with this controversial subject matter in there, would not.
Senator Schmidt, it's probably more appropriate for Senator Thomasoni to deal with this provision, but have you talked to him about it?
You know, actually, we've had ongoing conversations, Mr. Chair, with Senator Tomasoni, and we're just beginning the discussion of silica sand mining in his committee. And the plan was for this to come before him once we've had an opportunity to talk about the policy implications of sand mining in southeastern Minnesota. So I think this conversation is right for that committee, and I think if we're able to get this language in front of that committee, we can deal with it appropriately.
I think, Senator Schmidt, you might want to express to Senator Tomasoni that the Rules Committee is probably going to let this go through, but I think it's pretty clear people have got some concerns that, but is probably more appropriately addressed in the Environment Finance Committee than here.
Mr. Chair, I hear those concerns loud and clear, and I just like to reassure folks. I'm trying to get this right, and I'm not taking a position on sand mining in Minnesota. I just want to make sure that we do what we can right now to create a clear path forward that's responsible, that gives our concerned citizens assurance that's transparent, that's responsible, gives our local decision makers a sense that the state has their back, and that agency has direction to do what it should do in terms of getting this right. So I'll definitely take your concerns into account and encourage a thorough conversation in Senator Tomasoni's committee.
Senator Gazalka, will that work? We try not to amend bills and rules is my concern, but I don't know if deleting provisions is the same as amending. But
Mr. Chair, with what Senator Schmidt brought up, I will withdraw that oral amendment request, hoping that or waiting to see what it is going to Environment Committee. Is that correct?
Environment Finance.
All right. I will withdraw that.
Senator Skoy. Thank you,
Mr. Chair. And Senator Gazalka, I'm on that committee, and I'll bring this issue up for you.
Thank you.
Any other discussion on Senate File 796?
I'll move it, Mr. Chairman, Senate to Finance.
Senator Pappas moves Senate File 796 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no?
No.
Motion fails. Thank you, Senator Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Rosen.
Hello, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Rosen, welcome to the Rules Committee.
Thank you. It's always good to be in front of rules. And it's not my fault this time. Senate File 1081, Mr. Chair and members, is the Minnesota Board of Pharmacy Policy Bill. And the reason it's before you is because of Rule 2.03. There's three primary issues that are addressed in this bill. Unfortunately, okay, we did get the
Christine Grossman.
We did get the current engrossment of the bill. And that is just being passed out right now because it was amended in health policy. So the three primary issues that it deals with is the...
Senator Rosen, could you first tell us why it's late?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So there is no House companion because Representative Liebling did not want to deal with this bill that is a Board of Pharmacy policy bill because she didn't think she could get it through in time. So she took out pieces of it, of the compounding piece, and she's sending that on its own in House File 1136. Representative Mulry has a companion of this, and he's been sitting on it. So this is, again, an important bill for the department and for Department of Human Services and MDH because they've been working on this. It's part of the governor's state substance abuse strategy. So we are trying to move this thing forward, and it'll probably have to be amended onto something or in conference committee. But from here, if it passes out of your committee, Mr. Chair, it'll go to judiciary. But it did pass out of policy in time. So the House had a few issues.
Senator Limmer, you served with Senator Mulry.
Yes, I did.
We were discussing it.
Representative Mulry, I'm sorry.
I only have good things to say.
On tape.
You're a wise man.
But Mr. Chair,
so it's just a matter of matching up with a House file that contains many of these provisions?
Exactly. And Mr. Chair, and the piece that is not in here The piece that is in Representative Liebling's is the compounding issue that deals with the fungus issue from Massachusetts and the licensing piece. So she's handling that. That's also in this bill. Also, the immunizations, which is very important for the Department of Health, that's in this bill. And one of the really important pieces is the continuation and the work on the prescription monitoring program to deal with the opioid addiction. And that is something that has been heavily agreed upon and worked with the MMA and the doctors and the pharmacist, and so they have made some advancements in there. I have Dr. Cody Weiberg from the Board of Pharmacy with me for clear clarification.
Members, any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
And this is going to
The committee report was that the bill be sent to judiciary, but because the bill ended up late, the committee report was never adopted on the floor. It was automatically re-referred to rules. So
it will be going
to judiciary, which is where the previous committee wanted it to go.
Yeah. Right. All right. Right. And I believe I'm scheduled for a Thursday if it makes it out of your committee, Mr. Chair.
Ooh, yes.
Any other discussion?
If
not, Senator Fischbach moves that Joint Rule 2.03 be suspended for further proceedings under Senate File 1081 and that the report from the Committee on Health and Human Services be adopted. Any discussion? And, Senator Lemire.
And does it go to judiciary?
It automatically does when we adopt the committee report.
Just wanted to make sure of that.
Oh, jeez.
Any discussion? Senator Lemire, you think this is a good bill?
Well, we'll talk about that in judiciary, Mr. Chair.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no, the motion prevails. Senator Rosen, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much, members.
Graveyard of all
bills. Graveyard of old bills.
Gun control.
Members, our only other business is the subcommittee report on the permanent and joint rules. Our intent would be to try to get this out of here today and take it up on the floor tomorrow. So, let's adopt the committee report and then we can get it in front of us. Senator Marty moves SR 0019-1, the committee report from the subcommittee on permanent and joint rules. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no, the motion prevails. The rules are now in front of us.
Sure.
Let's have counsel walk through what the work of the subcommittee.
So, Mr. Chairman and members, most of what you'll see in here, as a matter of fact, almost everything is a staff recommendation that the subcommittee on permanent joint rules reviewed and recommended. Beginning on page 3, there are some changes made at the bottom of that page to the procedures for dealing with resolutions that are not in bill form. These changes are not intended to have any substantive effect other than to clarify that those resolutions, if they are referred to a committee, would be referred to the Committee on Rules. These changes are intended to make this procedure easier to understand. Then moving ahead to page 4, you can see there are changes made to the procedure for announcing budget targets on lines 4.7 through 4.9, and this would require announcement of the targets within 30 days after the last state general fund revenue and expenditure forecast in the odd-numbered year. There are some further changes in the same rule that you'll see at the bottom of page 4 and the top of page 5. And again, these are simply intended to make the procedures for dealing with amendments to omnibus appropriations or tax bills a little easier to understand. And I guess what I'll add here, you can't see what they'll look like when they're engrossed. The changes may be slightly confusing to follow, but basically they're placed in numbered clauses and separated in a way that will make it a little easier to follow what amendments would be in order to those omnibus bills. On page 6, this was the result of some work in the on line 6.17, which deals with appointments to standing committees and basically the creation of the committee structure at the beginning of the legislative session.
Rule 10.3 appeared previously in the Senate rules in a slightly different form preceding the previous biennium. This change, the last sentence here, requires the uniform criteria to be adopted by the Committee on Rules and Administration, and then the majority and minority committee assignments to new committees will be subject to that criteria. The other thing I'll add here, and you'll see repeated references in several places through the bill. I won't highlight each of them, but you'll see numerous references to budget divisions. This is just to clarify that committee procedures in these places apply to budget divisions as well. And that applies to the changes shown on page 7 and 8. I'll bring you to the changes beginning on page 10 to Rule 16, which provides credentials for news coverage to those covering the Minnesota Senate. What this does is reorganize the substantial changes that were made to this rule and condense it somewhat. It's the changes on 10.11 to 10.13. Well, this is a change. It's moving the requirement that the Secretary of the Senate is responsible for providing a reasonable number of spaces on the floor and in the gallery and placing it at the front of the rule. And the changes here eliminate some of the specificity with regard to the number of spaces in each place and provide that discretion to the Secretary of the Senate. The change on line 10.16 and 10.18 is intended to make this workable. The definition of political organization that is shown as stricken there is so broad that it would include some of the existing news outlets. Then on line 10.19 to 10.26, you'll see the procedures, and this is language that is simply being moved from another place within the rule right now to this location. This sets up a procedure for the Sergeant-at-Arms to review applications for the credentials. I think I've highlighted for you the substantive changes that you'll see here. If you look on page 11, there's a lot of stricken language. Like I said, much of that is being condensed because it's is now there's general authority for the Secretary of the Senate working with the sergeant to provide those spaces to the media. And it was discussed at some length in the subcommittee with some testimony from the Sergeant-at-Arms. The other changes in the document are somewhat limited. Thank you. There are some procedures that affect personnel shown at the bottom of page 26. And this just clarifies the procedures for hiring new employees. The time for posting, the minimum time required, is reduced to 1 week. And there's an allowance provided for posting on the Senate website. That just modernizes those procedures. Now, the remaining changes on page 29 are those relate to the earlier changes I described with references to subcommittees and divisions to include them in the provisions that apply to standing committees. Thank you. And I think I have overlooked another change. On page 24, at the bottom there on lines 28 through 32, you can see that a deadline is now provided for the provision of completed minutes of Senate committee meetings. The Secretary has to ensure that by October 1st of each year, those minutes are provided to the Legislative Reference Library. And that is, I think, what I have to tell you about the changes to the permanent rules.
Any discussion? Senator Stump.
Just, Mr. Chairman, just a question on the, is that different than before the minutes of the committees? Do they go to the Secretary of the Senate and then to the reference Legislative Reference Library? I'm not.
So, Mr. Chairman and Senator Stumpf, if you look at the current language, the Secretary is required to deliver a copy of the minutes to the Legislative Reference Library, but there's no deadline provided. In the past, there's been some difficulty in getting those minutes to the Legislative Reference Library on a timely basis.
Current rule says promptly.
October is
promptly. That's very subjective. Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I maybe this is a question for Mr. Bonner, but and we didn't, to my recollection, talk about this in the subcommittee meeting on the rules that we discussed the credentialing policy for news coverage. But in thinking about this and reading through it since then, there's no provision for the revocation of credentials. And I don't know if that needs to be provided for or what happens or what might happen if there was a organization or an individual who were allowed credentials to cover, and then at some point it was determined that wasn't a good decision or a decision needed to be changed, and what would be the process to change that? It seems like what we're saying is that there would be a application made, a credential issued, and once that credential is issued, it's good for the whole session. Is that correct?
Senator Lindquist, have we ever dealt with that?
Mr. Chairman, members of the Rules Committee, Sven Lindquist, Sergeant Arms for the Senate. Thankfully, that issue has never come up, Senator Hahn. I suppose it could, but what would happen, I would guess, would be an appeal would be made to this committee to deal with whatever the offense is. We've had the luxury, this rules change is part of a journey dealing with this issue of credentialing, and historically, based on print media, radio, television, there's always been an upline process within each one of those mediums to deal with the potential of wrongdoing. Probably our first conversation regarding the blogosphere, if you will, and that sort of thing dates back to 1997, 1998. This has been in the work for a very long time. And that's where we find the difficulty of understanding and knowing where some of these people are doing their work, if it's in an attic in a basement or on a bench in front of one of the chambers. So you are correct. There is no mechanism at this point to address a wrongdoing, but I think that probably if, in fact, there were a problem, it would find the issue would find its way back to this committee very quickly.
Okay. Senator Hahn, maybe let's have counsel get something on the record as to how we might deal with something like that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hahn, I'd certainly agree with everything Mr. Lindquist has said. What I would add to that is whoever holds the credentials when they are on the Senate floor is subject to all of the other rules that govern the Senate, including the understandings of custom and usage and conduct and so forth. So the sergeant would clearly have the authority to handle those situations under the general authority and the rules.
And Mr. Chair, I appreciate the conversation. I guess as we're thinking about just the blogging and the more, non-traditional media sources that we deal with today, if it were determined at some point that we had credentialed somebody that may not be the right person that should be credentialed and you wanted to remove that credential, and not because they had done anything that would violate Senate rules, but simply because they may not be representative of the intent of the rule that we have, for example, what you're suggesting is that we probably have to bring it back to the Rules Committee and take that up as an individual circumstance. Is that essentially correct?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hahn, I think I'd have to agree with that. Ultimately, it would be a determination for the Rules Committee.
Okay.
That's an important conversation, Senator Hahn. I don't think we'd probably deal with it like something somebody wrote. But,
right. Mr. Chairman, that's not my point. Is yes, right. It's more of I guess I was thinking that you could envision a non-traditional news source that maybe really wasn't a news source and began to do other things and was using the credential for purposes beyond just news coverage. It wasn't so much what they were saying, it's just what they were doing. And once they've been given the credential, then we'd have to admit them. And I just was thinking that if something like that were to happen, how would we deal with it? So. But if there's a way that we think we can cover it by treating it as an exception, I'm fine with that. I'm not asking for additional rules, but just
Senator Newman.
Interested.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The discussion that we've been having about bloggers has answered a lot of my questions, because when I read the language in Rule 16, it at least in my mind, certainly could include folks that are out there blogging as individuals rather than as organizations, and there are some folks who are involved in blogging that aren't not what I would call objective in what they put both in their blog and for instance on YouTube. So, you know, I see that we have made a change from frequent to regular news coverage, and I think that that's probably a good idea because bloggers are frequent but maybe not regular. So I think that that is a good change. I'm just pleased to see that there is a conversation going on regarding that, because it would make me a little bit nervous, especially if we are able to get credentialing back here to this committee and address it. I do have a question, Mr. Chairman, on page 6, beginning on line 17. Maybe you could help me a little bit. It's the first time I've been through the rulemaking procedure, and in there I see that the Rules Committee is going to adopt some uniform criteria for purposes of these committee assignments. Mr. Chairman, is there any past practices that would identify what this criteria might be? Can you give us an idea as to when the criteria is going to come before the Rules Committee so that we be able to look at it? Because when I look at the rule, it just says we're going to adopt criteria, but it doesn't go any farther. I don't have any idea what that criteria might be.
Let's have counsel take a crack at it. And Senator Newman, we did talk about this in the subcommittee, in that a Rules Committee might be do something after the election relative to reorganization and have a totally different composition of the Rules Committee in January once you potentially the majority changed. But let's have counsel take a shot at it.
Sure.
So, Mr. Chairman and Senator Newman, a very similar version of this rule was in the Senate rules for a lengthy period of time. I can't tell you exactly how long. It was, I think, removed in the last biennium. Previously, it required the majority to communicate the uniform criteria to the minority, and the change the subcommittee made to that was to require the Rules Committee to adopt the uniform criteria rather than simply having the uniform criteria issue from the majority. In the past, this was done a little less formally, so I don't think there's any record preserved of what these criteria were. There may be letters or something to that effect elsewhere. Examples that have been given to me are requirements such as no member may serve on both the Tax and the Finance Committee, restrictions like that that are intended to govern how committee memberships are composed.
Mr. Chairman,
Sir Newman,
is then the adoption of the uniform criteria something that is going to come back before this committee and we are going to formally adopt it? Is that what you have in mind?
That's the intent of the language on line 6.19.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hann.
Mr. Chairman, again, I know we talked about this in the subcommittee, but in thinking about this and envisioning circumstances that could occur, if we got to a point where there was going to be a change in majority, and so the Rules Committee of the current majority but soon to become the minority were to meet and establish uniform rules, for example, that would require all committees to have equal number of members of the minority and majority party as members of the committee and pass that rule. And then the incoming majority would then be subject to that, I assume, going into the new session as the majority. And they would not then probably have the ability to change that rule.
Well, Senator Hann, I believe the committee memberships are identified in 10.1 above. And this, I don't believe 10.3, actually, that's the intent of that, and relative for proportionality.
And Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the intent, but what I'm concerned about is if the language says that there is a criteria that would be adopted by the Rules Committee, and it was a criteria that, when applied, would limit the change in the new majority from being able to function as a majority, for example, they would then be limited in their ability to change that rule. I guess I'm a little bit concerned about the structure of this that would potentially be have that effect.
Well, Senator Hand, I think the rule specifies that you have to have some kind of uniform criteria. That makes more sense than me than being totally silent on the subject, because the incoming majority leader, if there was a new one, could do virtually anything they wanted. It seems like this would require that there be some kind of a uniform consideration, and that the entire Rules Committee deal with it, rather than potentially the incoming majority leader could just do anything that they might want. I think there's actually some protection in this.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, I understand the intent, and I, as I understand it, some of the examples that we talked about were commonsensical. But if you had a situation where you're having one majority becoming a minority and the minority becoming a majority, you'd have the outgoing majority passing a rule that would be binding on the incoming majority with respect to the structure of the committees. And I think that there is potential there to have that be less than ideal. And once that is in place, the incoming majority might be very hard-pressed to change that, depending on what those criteria were. And I understand that with the discussion we had, we're talking about some common sense things, but in some future date, there might be other majorities who might want to use that rule for some other purpose than common sense application. And I'm just a little concerned about putting in place a rule that would be administered by a majority that would be then necessarily complied with by an incoming majority that would not be able to change that rule.
But Senator Hand, the incoming majority, I mean, could hold a Rules Committee hearing on the opening day and change whatever they wanted to change. I mean,
assuming that the uniform criteria didn't impede that ability to do that, and that's what I'm unclear about, what those uniform criteria might do.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hand, I was trying to figure out what you were thinking about, and I can foresee that sort of thing, but I believe when the new legislature takes effect, they adopt temporary rules. And if they thought, if there was one, say, the majority party in leaving office decided that in order for the new majority to change any rules, they had a 3/4 margin required or something like that. Is that the sort of thing you're thinking? I'm thinking that because at the end of the, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but after an election cycle, we start out with no rules whatsoever and we adopt temporary rules at the beginning. And maybe Mr. Bonner, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me if an outgoing majority said that the new majority, in order to change any of the rules or change committee criteria or whatever, would have to have a 2-to-1 margin or something, that the new incoming legislature would just say those are the old permanent rules. We're going to adopt new temporary rules that overturn that. Is that, Mr. Bonner, is that correct, that the rules, the new legislature always gets to start anew with rules, and they start with usually temporary rules?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Marty, you're correct that one of the first things the Senate does when it organizes is adopt temporary rules, and those often contain some measure of changes. So if there were something objectionable along those lines, that could be addressed directly in the temporary rules, which are usually, I think, always adopted on the first day of the session.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, if these are kind of the common sense, the freshman can't be on Senator Cohen's Finance Committee, for example, why can't we just incorporate those into these rules instead of having this, you know, future into the future we'll establish these criteria? Why would we not put those kinds of comments just to make sure that everybody understands what's happening and that it's not something necessarily that's partisan but yet more senatorial, that we're adopting as a Senate as opposed to a partisan, that we would just put those in instead of leaving it up to the Rules Committee?
Well, Senator Fischbach, previously the rule stated that the majority shall, what's the word, counsel? Just convey to the minority what the circumstances are. I think having the Rules Committee do it is a better process.
Mr. Chair, it was not in the rules the last 2 years. It was in there previously. So this is being, I mean, it's added. This is added language. This is not just a simple revision, as I recall. I don't.
It was the provision that said the majority shall convey to the minority was in the rules up until 2011.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's correct. And it was not something that I think was missed. I mean, unless the minority really wanted the rules, or really wanted the criteria, but I don't recall there was an outcry for the uniform criteria from the minority at that time.
Senator Fischbach, I think this actually, my reading of it, is it actually forces the majority to come to the Rules Committee to have a conversation about what should the uniform criteria be than just arbitrarily doing whatever they want to do. I think this is actually some protection for everybody. Otherwise, if we're silent on it, the majority is just going to do whatever they want to do and tell the minority that. This actually forces that conversation to this table, which I think is beneficial to everybody in the Senate.
And Mr. Chair,
there's nothing tricky about this. I'm actually trying to just kind of have more of an open process, I think, than not saying anything went wrong the last 2 years, but I think this committee having a conversation, and we're all senior members, about what kind of provisions we think should be the appropriate committee makeups, I think is a good conversation for this committee to have, people that have been here a while, rather than just arbitrarily being made by whoever the majority is.
And Mr. Chair, in that same sense, then wouldn't it make sense to have those criteria in the rules? Then they would be examined every couple of years.
We knew what they were, but I don't think we know what all the circumstances are. But that's the conversation I think we will have. That's the conversation we will have. And maybe once we develop them, maybe we put them in. I don't object to that, but I don't know that we know what they are today. Senator Murray?
Mr. Chair, I'd say, if so, the rule subcommittee might take a look at that. But, I don't care whether they're in the rules or not. This seems to be a little step forward towards setting a process in place rather than arbitrarily the majority tells the minority. But I think if you want to do that, let's have the rule subcommittee take a look at what they might be.
Looking around this table,
no, it's
like,
not today.
It's like all the members of the Rules Committee need to have classes or you can't participate. Senator Pappas, I guess you're off.
I had surgery.
What about? Senator Newman.
Yeah, I'll just chime in again. I fortunately or unfortunately started this. Mr. Chairman, I agree with you with respect to the establishment of criteria. I do see that as a benefit. I think it's helpful. My only request would be is that, you know, when appropriate, this conversation come back. You know, maybe it goes through the subcommittee first and then comes back to us. But I think that we should have that discussion on what the criteria is and then adopt them. I really do. So I do agree with you on this.
Senator Newman, I agree, and I think this is better than being silent on the subject. It might not be perfect yet, but it's a good conversation for those that have been around here a while to have.
Mitch?
Any other discussion? Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, on page 10, section or provision 15.9 about the retiring room, I just wanted to bring up, I mean, this sounds so strict, but the custom and usage is you're going to find the chaplain in the retiring room. You're going to find maybe members of the front desk that might take a rest in the retiring room, a break. You're going to find the nurse who used to do blood pressure in the retiring room, and you're going to find the sergeants in the retiring room. So I'm wondering if this is all kind of custom of the Senate, and it's not strictly in line with 15.9. And I don't want to make the sergeants of arms strictly enforce a rule that's we haven't customarily strictly enforced. I mean, we haven't let the public or spouses or children or staff in the room. So should we more accurately reflect or, I mean, we could model it after, this is not a power grab on my part, after 15.6 and just says the president would designate people who could go into the retiring room, just to allow some more workability. Sounds like a power grab,
yeah.
Senator Cohen?
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hamm.
And I appreciate Senator Papp's point. Maybe if we just remove the word strictly and said the sergeant at arms shall enforce the rule and let them use some discretion in how they enforce it, that might serve the purpose. If the sergeant is willing to assume that discretion.
Senator Hamm, is there a difference between strictly and just enforce?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess to Senator Papp's point, I think that if I read the word strictly, I think that means letter of the law. I think if you have enforce, I think it gives the person enforcing a little bit of leeway to decide some discretion on how they're going to do that, and it allows for the custom and usage of the Senate to be come
Senator Pappas, does that get us anywhere?
I don't think it matters enforce the rule or strictly enforce the rule.
Have we had a problem?
Strictly just means you're mean.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, I don't think we need that last sentence there because I think the sergeant enforces all the rules, not just that one. I'd move to strike that sentence.
But then whose job will it be?
Sergeant, because they are enforcing
all
the Senate
rules. Right.
Somebody enforces strictly and others not.
I know somebody.
Mr. Chair.
Not a problem. It doesn't exist.
That's right.
Mr. Chair. How did you do it when you were president?
Senator Fishbach?
Mr. Chair, I think we should leave it as it is. It has not been an issue, and we do ask the sergeant to, I mean, and it is not always a pleasant position to be in when a senator brings someone back and the sergeant is the one that has to go and ask them to leave and enforce those rules. And so I think we should just leave this, and we haven't had an issue at this point. And there are certain people that we do just allow that is custom and usage, and it hasn't been an issue at this
point. I think the sergeant has done a pretty good job of using reasonable discretion. I just remember the situation of Senator Kubi's wife for a period of time being allowed, and it seems like he's done a pretty good job of using good judgment.
Not strictly.
And we could argue that that's the custom and usage, that he's used good judgment on that.
Yeah, the
House would love us to weaken this up a little bit.
Oh, yeah. They just want to get in there.
But you know who kicked us out of the House retiring room? Steve Trimble.
Well, I thought it was Rukavina.
No, it was Trimble. He was mad that he couldn't come in the Senate retiring room, so he got them to change the rules for the House retiring room. I think even for former House members. I mean, I can't go in the House retiring room, so.
Rukavina did that part. Former House members.
Senators. Former House members, only if they're senators. Any other former House members? Was he that?
Yeah.
Go back in.
Well, people who left him to go to the Senate. Any other discussion on permanent rules? The motion would be that I introduce, Senator Pappas moves that the chair introduce a resolution on behalf of the Rules Committee for consideration by the full Senate.
So moved.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Thank you, members. A quorum was present. I don't know that I ever said that.
Now do we have that other meeting?
Rules Committee is adjourned.
But we have another.